Let's see. Thanks a lot. I suppose this will be slightly different from other talks until now, in the sense that I had the pleasure to work with Jerry only for a couple of years long ago, but those years had a very significant impact on what I was doing then, what I still do today, and so that's the story I'm trying to tell this morning. And now, this started exactly that week in August 1990, and there was like so many workshops in Enschede at ITC in the Netherlands. At the time, I was working in Wageningen, which is not too far from Enschede, and getting ready to come to the States. I was going to Goddard for a period of time, not clear how long, and very worried. The idea was to go there to work on like energy balance, latent heat flux, and at that time I was very worried about how to characterize roughness, the structure of the land surface, and I have been doing a couple of studies in the Sahara, and it's quite complicated. And if you think about estimating aerodynamic roughness in a place where you have the occasional tree, shrub, and all sorts of structures on the surface, and you have no information whatsoever to do that. And so I remember very well that I got to Enschede, I was leaving at the end of that week. So I was very busy packing and all those things. And getting there and going up a staircase and bumping into a poster from Jerry about using lasers to measure the geometry of gullies. And I was really, literally struck. And I said, that's my solution. And so that's what I did, like, in a way, moonlighting from Goddard, because I was supposed to work there on other things. And so I was regularly escaping to Beltsville to work on the laser data from Walnut Gulch. And so we had the paper together after a couple of years with another campaigns, a few travels, and that type of complications. And so meeting Jerry in Enschede really gave a completely new, unexpected twist on to my expectations about what I was going to do. I finally stayed 2 years between Greenbelt and Beltsville. And now that acquaintance with laser measurements had quite some impact on things that I've been doing myself, and now on a few graduate students. And if I didn't miss anybody, I have been and I am now supervising some 7 graduate students, all working on different sorts of laser applications. And a few I have included in these presentations. And the focus initially was using lasers from like ground-based aircraft and satellites to characterize vegetation. And then, as in many situations, the thing got out of hand, and you will see why. I mean, got still things related to lasers, but totally unrelated from vegetation. And so one thing is that the lasers, it seems like a stupid measurement in the sense the distance from an instrument to whatever you bump into. But actually, you can see lots of very interesting things. Like, for example, capturing with a ground-based laser system, capturing the very detailed structure of trees. And now, the structure, you see, it is kind of intuitive that you see the structure of the tree. But if you say, I want to know how many branches there are, where they are, which order, how large, that becomes complicated. You can do it by hand, but probably you will spend some time and then end up with a very well-known tree and nothing else. Or you can do it with a terrestrial, with a laser system. What you want to do is to go from there, so it's a bunch of laser points, to something like this, where actually every individual element of the structure is individually characterized in terms of position, branching order, diameter, as an axis. So you have calculated the skeleton of the clouds, the point clouds on your left. And this is the one PhD thesis, and it's all about going from here to there. And so you have a point cloud on a leafless, acquired on a leafless tree, and you construct small, small clusters of the laser points, and then you slowly you contract all these cells to the skeleton. And the idea being that instead of trying to fit an analytical shape to a lot of points doing lots of iteration, this can be done following formal rules like theorems, so which spare a lot of computational load and work. So one particularly useful thing is that you can reconstruct the hierarchy, the structure of a tree. And once you have the axis, like here, like there, you can compute the diameter, because you have lots of estimates of the diameter of the tree and the branches in all points. And the skeleton ideas will come back later in the presentation for something unexpected. So don't forget this concept. Now, once you are happy with a single tree, you can try to do the same with the forest. And so that you have now a point cloud over an entire forest. And so the first thing is, how do we find back the trees? You know the story, if you would like, you lose sight of the trees and the forest. Now, it's true. It's actually complicated to find back the trees.
Scientific evidence
to have,
sure.
Yes. But once you do, in the sense that this is done looking at the statistics of high points and looking for small windows where you will find the largest number of highest point in the distribution of laser hits as a function of height in the canopy. And you have found an estimate of the center of the tree, so you can construct maps of the density of vegetation in the crown and then going out from the crown. And now, since this is too complicated, too time-consuming, and Jerry, I'm not sure he would like what I'm going to say now, and it's too much work and too time-consuming to collect all this data with field measurements to have some reference, to see what can you measure, how you should measure, the configuration of the instrument, angular sampling, all those kinds of things, is a lot easier to do simulations. In the sense, construct simulated trees and then simulate the measurements and then look how well you can retrieve the properties that you know because you have constructed the tree from laser pulses, so synthetic point clouds, and as a function, for example, of the view angle, the scan configuration, and other things that would be quite complicated to replicate in practice. And the advantage of simulation is that you can easily do the same for many different stands. So you can vary the position of the trees, the density, and in this specific example, the density of the understory. The point being that in this case, you also want to separate the understory from the upper story for a roughness calculation, not in air, but in water. And now, synthetic trees and point clouds are also useful if you want to capture individual trees. And again, synthetic data are quite helpful. Or this is like a brief summary of this has been published last year. And interesting enough, the application of the algorithm derived on the synthetic data to actual the measurements provided more accurate than the test done on this synthetic forest stands, possibly because in here, the synthetic forest ends, there was a broader range of conditions included than in the actual case of the field measurements. So synthetic data are not that bad. Now, why have we been doing all this? And now the idea is like, we don't have too much fantasy. And so after working on aerodynamic roughness, the most obvious things to do was to work on hydrodynamic roughness. And so this is just an example of results. So what you want is a map of an area where you may have, in case of floods, you get overland flow. So you want a map of roughness, but you want to characterize well the lower part of the vegetation, shrubs, the understory, because luckily water never gets to 4 or 5 meters. So you want to be a characterization of the lowest meter, lowest 2 meters. And that's why this effort on the understory and the retrieval of the density of the understory. And so with the synthetic data, what was done was to develop a regression between, this is a measure of the vertical gradient of laser hits in the canopy, and this is the vegetation density, how many leaves and branches you have per square meter, per cubic meter of canopy. So that, in a sense, you have, that is a measure of the attenuation of the laser pulses in the canopy, and that is related using this synthetic data to the dynamic, to the vegetation density, which is an essential parameter for the calculation of the hydrodynamic roughness. Likewise, for isolated trees, was this other relationship was developed. So on the basis of like this separation or this delineation of isolated trees, that these things of finding the trees back. And so you know where there are isolated trees, in that case you apply that algorithm. If there is like a denser forest, you apply the other one. And likewise, there are other class-specific algorithms for grassland, tilled lands, buildings, and so on. Now, that was, I forgot to say, that that map was calculated, this one. So this study was done with an airborne laser system, which has also the capability of a slant view, so you can, so to say, try to look under the crown. And at very high density, it's normally operated from like a couple of hundred meters to get between 70 to 100 points per square meter. So it starts being the range that you can really see the structure of individual trees. And now there are also laser altimeters on satellites. Actually, there has been one operating for 6 years. And although it was designed for measurements on ice sheets, there is plenty of measurements over vegetation, lots of places, including the Netherlands. So at some point, an obvious question to ask was, how does the frequency distribution of laser hits collected by a single retard system relate to a full waveform measured by the glass altimeter? The glass is calculating a time profile of the photons that come back to the sensor. If you look at very high resolution statistics of laser hits, it's not too different. The only thing is you do a lot more measurements in the same footprint. And anyway, so the here was try to relate the shape of the glass waveform to the land cover. So that on the basis of the, like this is a single waveform, on the basis of the shape of the waveform, you can tell something about which kind of surface we were looking at. GLASS data could also possibly be the only source to detect changes in areas like the Qinghai-Tibet Plateau in two important aspects of the water cycle over land: changes in the mass of glaciers and the level of lakes. In the plateau there are thousands of lakes, even bigger lakes, there are hundreds, and an obvious climate signal is in the change over time of the lake level, and it's also relatively simple to observe. More complicated are changes in the volume, the surface of the glaciers, because of the morphology. Anyway, so what we did was to collect all the GLASS data over the plateau, over 6 years, there are quite some. And the first thing was to see how the high resolution digital terrain model developed from ASTER data relates to the GLASS measurements. And this is the result. Actually, the GLASS data are much more accurate in terms of vertical accuracy than the ASTER global digital elevation model. You can use GLASS to adjust the ASTER GDEM. And now, if you look, another big advantage of a LASER system is that ISAT has like fixed orbits. So you are either lucky or unlucky in the sense that if you are where the satellites pass over, then you have lots of data. If you are just off the track, you get nothing. Now, in this is an example when a case where like we are lucky. Over a lake, this particular lake in Tibet, you get three repeated tracks quite close with lots of data, so that you can clearly see that these are like the red ones in 2003, 2004, 5, 7, and 6. And in this signal, so these are the points like measured along across the lake. And so you clearly see the change in the elevation of the lake. You also see strange things, because this trend should not be there. So this points to an error in the calculation of the orbit. So the satellite is moving away, so the distance increases. Not that much. You are actually talking a couple of tens of centimeters, but it's still quite visible. There are also outliers over water. But that's not too bad, because if you have hundreds of measurements, and the only thing that you want is one number, so the average elevation of the lake, is still quite some information to get that. And now, if that operation is done for all the tracks acquired in 6 years and all the lakes of Tibet, and now first you get trends with some oscillations from 1 year to the other. And so we start in September 2003, and here we are like last year. And then you have a positive and negative trends in different places in Tibet. So you have a climate signal, and we are just in the process of putting things together between these trends and other information that there are about changes in specific lakes. What I want to stress is that something like this is the only way to actually observe an hydrological signal over the entire plateau, because do field work here means months, and it's extremely complicated. In the end, you have a lot of information about one, two lakes, maybe three, and while only the bigger lakes were like 600. And then laser altimeters have also been flown around Mars, and where there are lots of very interesting landforms to observe. And so this actually, there is no such, as we have just seen with GLASS, there is no such laser altimetry coverage about our planet. The one over Mars is a lot better. And there are lots of exciting features, things to measure, like this scar And there could be lots of things related to erosion here, besides the impacts, of course. So the question is, how do we identify and measure features? We get back to our tree. And so this is a point cloud. I did a little trick because the MOLA data are not sufficiently dense to do this. So this is a point cloud obtained from the high resolution stereo camera, where the image have a resolution of 12 meters. And so you can construct a DTM at very high resolution. And then you do the same. You take, this is a point cloud. You construct the little sets, the little groups of elevation points. And slowly, slowly, you contract to the structure. Once you have this axis, then it becomes feasible to measure things like the depth of a channel, the width of a channel, the branching order, and things that otherwise would be quite tricky, and some problems to do field work there. And so that I would like to conclude, and really I hope I made clear how grateful I am to Jerry for the very significant impact that that visit to Enschede and those 2 years in Bensfield had on a lot of things that I am doing, and I look forward to keep doing. And I'll leave it here.
Thanks. What do you mean by OC tree?
Octree. Is this cells, or is this a tree of cells? And these groups.
With the laser altimetry, how can you use something like this on a benchtop, sort of on a lab desk, to look at a plant that you might have spread out there, to say a plant in a pot?
Of course. This terrestrial base system, actually, they don't work on the principle of measuring the travel time. They measure the phase shift on a modulated waveform. And so basically, you know exactly what waveform to expect. And that makes it possible to have a much higher range resolution. So you are talking millimeters over fraction of millimeters. And the normal systems do a spherical scan. So they have a mirror that does like this, and the instrument rotates. There are systems where you can restrict this angle, so you don't throw lasers everywhere, all over the place. You just focus on what you want to measure. But if you would focus on a plant, then I'm sure you would think that you got too many measurements.
That's always a good one. And is that sort of, then it uses fractals to characterize the branching at all? It looks like that in the trees.
Yes. Yes. We didn't do that, but I have seen papers where. So
forgetting that laser image of the trees, that was a ground-based laser? The very first slide?
Yes.
Okay.
But
you scan?
That one was done with these systems that does this modulated waveform phase. It measures the phase length instead of the travel time.
Okay.
And then you have all these lots of points. The same was actually done this skeleton reconstruction, with the same airborne data that I was showing with this story about the hydrodynamic roughness. So you don't need millions of points per cubic meter to do that.
Great, thanks. Anybody else? Thank you very much.